Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Welcome to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek. Marge was searching for the purpose of her life and the truth that would tie everything together to make sense of what was taught and what was happening on our planet, the fire that was creating all the smoke. Through many experiences, she was finally led to the knowledge book that provided all the answers. Marge is now talking about this gift to humanity on Knowledge Book Radio, so all can be united in peace, love, and harmony. This live call-in show at 1-800-930-2819 is amazing. So get ready to hear about the Knowledge Book. Here's your host, Marge Potasek.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marge Potasek, and you are listening to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek on Transformation Talk Radio. For the next hour, we will continue to cover some topics from the Knowledge Book, as we've been doing for the past year and a little bit. And this week, we are going to talk about perception. What glasses are you wearing? And just to remind you, our website is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. Telephone number for suggestions and topics and any questions is 973-787-7035. Again, 973-787-7035. And my email is mmjp99@gmail.com. That's MaryMaryJohnPeter99@gmail.com. And we have a lot to cover, so let's jump right in to the topic of perception, or what color glasses are you wearing? When we see something, our brains automatically know what it is. Whether it's a ball, or a baby, or a horse, or the moon, or whatever it is, we see it for what it is, and can usually associate that object with a symbol, a word, or a phrase that represents that object. When we were a child and don't know what that object is, we ask an adult who then at least names that object for us. Once we're adults, we can usually do some research and identify that object. But what happens when an object is completely outside of that person's sight dictionary? What happens when you see something that you can't identify at all, no matter how hard you try? If you, like me, think that these are silly questions, since of course we can name or identify what's in front of our eyes, then I guess we all need to think again, since I actually had an experience where I could not see, could not identify what was literally in front of my eyes. When I was in maybe the first or second year of high school, I heard a noise coming from outside my window, and I, of course, looked to see what it was. And I saw nothing, so I went back to what I was doing. Then something intrigued me about what I had seen, so I looked again. And I found that there were the usual bushes and grass, and yet there was a field where things were blurry and fuzzy, and all I could see was this blob that consisted of smaller blobs of colors. It was very indistinct, and I could not, however long I looked at it, identify it at all. I went back to what I was doing, but at the same time, I felt my brain's wheels spinning, trying to bring this object into focus. It took about 3 or 4 times of looking out the window for me, for my brain, to finally identify the object, a male mallard duck. Of course, I knew what a mallard duck looked like, and actually could identify it as a male mallard duck with its distinctive color markings. But then, I wanted to know why I could not identify it from the first time I looked at it. I certainly had seen these and other ducks before. What prevented me from seeing this object as a male mallard duck when I first saw it? And this is where my search for understanding how the signals the eyes receive get received by the brain and then get processed by the brain. At first, I wanted to know how the eyes function, and this brought in a lot of surprising details. The eye itself is an organ of sight that allows us to navigate in the world. It has several component parts, most of which we know, like the cornea, the lens, the iris, the retina, the optic nerve, conjunctiva, etc. Each of these components has its own particular function and its particular structural and cell shape and design. The eyes are protected inside the eye orbits by the bones of the skull, the eyelids, eyelashes, eyebrows, and conjunctiva, the inner surface layer of the eyelids. The eye itself contains three major parts: the sclera, the white outer casing of the eye, the choroid, or the blood vessels just inside the sclera, and the transparent portion, the cornea, the iris, the lens, vitreous gel, that controls the light coming into the eye. There are special glands and ducts that constantly coat the eyes, keeping them clean and moist. At the back of the eye is the retina. This is a major concentration of special nerve fibers that convert the light waves being focused on them into nerve impulses that are then transmitted to the visual cortex of the brain for processing. The cornea is a transparent covering of the part of the eye that allows light to come in. The iris is a colorful muscle that regulates how much light is passed to the inside of the eye. When in strong light, the iris contracts and leaves only a small opening for the light to get through, and in dim light, the iris opens to allow more light to get through. Then comes the lens, and the lens acts just like the glass lenses that are used in microscopes and the functionality of which we actually learned in physics when we studied optics. As we all know, light bends, is refracted when it passes through water or glass or a particular medium, and depending on the shape of the object, the light can also be split into its component, colors, or frequencies. Depending on the shape of the lens, or a mirror for that matter, the image going through the lens can be either magnified or minimized or turned upside down. Parallel light beams can be focused on a single point, or a single point of light can be sent out as parallel beams. We have a curved cornea that refracts light into a smaller area and a convex lens that then focuses the incoming beam of light onto the retina at the back of the eye. A convex lens where the tips of the lens are points and the middle of the lens is thick actually flips or turns the image upside down when the light striking the image then goes through the convex lens. For example, if we are looking at an up-pointing arrow, when that light passes through our eyes, the image that is thrown onto the retina will actually be a down-pointing arrow. We are actually seeing everything around us flipped, literally flipped, upside down. Back in the early days of discovery, the Greeks, like Aristotle, thought that the eyes actually emit light. This view was widely accepted until it was proven that light is actually coming into the eyes, not out of them. René Descartes, in the 17th century, actually proved that the eyes take in light and turn the image upside down. To prove this, he excised the lens of a bull's eyeball. He placed an image in front of this lens, and when that image was projected onto a screen, what was seen was an inverted copy of the object in front of the bull's eye. The place where the image is projected is the retina, situated at the back of the eye. It is a thin layer of tissue made up of millions of tiny light-sensing nerve cells called rods and cones because of their particular shape. The cones are found in the center of the retina, the macula. These are the cells that provide clear and sharp central vision, detect colors and the finer details. The rods, on the other hand, are responsible for peripheral vision, detect motion, and allow us to see in dim light or at night. These cells in the retina then convert the light striking them into electrical impulses that are then sent to the brain via nerve fibers, which the brain then somehow processes to produce the image that we see. The path of the nerves is not simple. Say we are looking at two rectangles of color, blue and orange, side by side, with blue on the left and orange on the right. The surprising discovery was that the left portion of the retina of both eyes takes in the light from the orange or right rectangle and sends these signals to the left occipital lobe. And the right side of both eyes actually takes in the blue light of the left rectangle and sends these signals to the right occipital lobe. The two nerve pathways actually meet and cross in the middle of the brain in an area called the optic chiasm. So far, nothing that I've researched so far has explained why I could not identify the male mallard duck for what seemed a very long time. I somewhat realized that the brain was doing something to whatever came through our eyes so that we'd be able to walk around chairs, go downstairs, hit a home run, do everything we need to do to navigate in the world and survive in it. I dug a bit deeper and found that not only I was confused how seeing actually takes place and what governs it. Apparently, based on scientific research, the answer lies in the power of the brain to take the sensory information it receives, sight, hearing, touch, smell, etc., and make it fit with what it already knows. The brain takes in the raw data from the senses and turns it into a coherent right-side-up image. This seemed to make logical sense to me since I remember seeing my granddaughter reaching for a rattle and missing it below where it was being held. She was moving her hand in space at the place she was seeing it, but not where it actually existed in space. She wiped at it a few more times and eventually was able to catch it. A psychologist, George Stratton, was also curious about how the brain takes in sensory input and somehow transforms it to our images of everything around us. To test this brain capability, he wore glasses that flipped his vision upside down for 8 days. In the first 4 days of the experiment, he saw everything upside down. However, by day 5, he was spontaneously seeing things right side up again. His brain had changed the processing of the raw data coming in and adjusted his perception of the world around him. But another surprising feature is that the light data that hits the retina is a flat, two-dimensional projection. However, when the brain overlays these two images, it is able to produce one seamless three-dimensional image. This is what allows us to have a depth perception to shoot a basket, catch a ball, drive a car, walk, or hit a distant object like an apple or any target with an arrow. You may have also experienced a two-dimensional view when either one of your eyes needed to be covered for a while due to an injury or operation. Suddenly, your depth perception disappears, and it's hard to know where everything is in space. Driving a car or doing any three-dimensional work, like sewing, cooking, putting on your socks, etc., become a bit of a challenge. Our brains also have the ability to fill in missing information. When the diagram of an eye is carefully viewed, we find that there is a spot in the back of the eye where blood vessels and nerves are attached, so that there are no visual receptor cells, no rods or cones in that area. However, when we view everything around us, there is no hole in the image we get of our environment. The brain has an uncanny ability to fill in the blanks, to connect the dots, to present a complete and seamless image to us. All of the 6 to 7 million cone photoreceptor cells in the eye that detect color are at the center of the retina. When we use our peripheral vision, we see in black and white, since there are no color processing nerve cells among the peripheral vision movement detection nerve cells. However, when we actually see, we see a continuous full color image at the center and at the outer edges of our vision. Again, the brain is filling in the blanks by extrapolating the information it has from the central color field to the entire area we are seeing. This leads to a question. Are we really seeing what is in front of us, or a mirage that the brain is presenting to us based on the sensory data it is receiving in conjunction with previous experience? Can we be seeing things that aren't there and missing images of things that are there? The mind has the power to piece together incomplete data using assumptions based on previous experience. This was labeled unconscious inference by scientists. The mind does draw on our past experiences. However, it was found that this is not an innate ability, but apparently it is a skill that is learned. And this discovery of our mind's ability to filter sensory data based on previous knowledge and experience provided a first inkling of the reason I could not see or identify the object I was seeing. I was familiar with mallard ducks, both male and female forms. However, my association with mallard ducks had always been in conjunction with lakes or ponds or some kind of water scenario. When confronted with a male mallard duck in a completely new environment, just grass and bushes with no water in sight, the brain had no basis to formulate and identify a known image, but in a completely new context. My brain's previous experiences had precluded the identification until eventually, after going through many iterations of searching in the brain database, maybe at some point ignoring the context, it found an image that matched the sensory data, and that's when I was actually able to see it for what it was, a male mallard duck. That leads to the question, what do we actually see? Yes, we're able to navigate in the world, but is the input we are receiving reliable? Does it actually present us with reality? Is the acronym WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get, really correct and reflects the real reality? The suspicion arises. What else does the brain do to the sensory input data that we're not aware that is doing? Digging a little deeper into the subject, we find that, apparently, the visual cortex of the brain actually makes decisions. But how can that be? Aren't the higher brain functions having to do with consciousness and thinking involved? Apparently not, at least according to a study done at the University of Michigan in 2015. Most people are familiar with optical illusions, where we see something from one angle looking different than when looking at that same. One image will switch from being a rabbit to a duck, an old woman to a young woman, two face profiles to a vase, etc. The study was conducted testing this and the following matter. The participants were placed in an MRI scanner and were shown two adjacent dot patterns on a projection screen. While looking at the dots, the brain activity was observed. However, in this case, vision was not the normal vision because a set of prisms was used so that the participants' eyes were each looking at a different dot pattern, and the dot patterns were also shown on a different part of the screen. When there is a combination of differing patterns seen by two eyes, an optical illusion is formed and perception, seeing, switches between the two patterns. We see either the duck or the rabbit, the profiles or the vase, or Marilyn Monroe or Albert Einstein. Previously, studies showed that the decision to see one of the two images in an optical illusion was controlled by the association cortex, a part of the brain having a higher level function dealing with choices. The visual cortex was regarded as having a lower level, simple task of just processing visual information. However, in the University of Michigan study, it was found that the visual cortex that became activated and not the association cortex. The reason given and the experiment was based on the participants not knowing that the images were different. The participants were not aware that the two patterns of dots were different. And although the participants' perception, seeing, switched back and forth between the two patterns of dots, there was no activity in the association cortex, which meant that the visual cortex was making the decision to switch between the two images on its own. This implies that the simple act of seeing, of generating an image in our mind's eye, is not so simple after all, and that the brain is making decisions independent of the higher level functions of the brain, like consciousness and thought. Our suspicions have increased a lot. What else impacts and affects what and how we see? The brain fills in the blanks, extrapolates color with no sensory data input, makes decisions of what is presented to the mind's eye. What else is there that we don't realize is happening? We all assume that when we are seeing with our brain, what we are seeing with our brain matches exactly to the input signal data we are receiving through our senses, especially our sight. When we have a cup of tea, see the steam rising, we are very careful not to spill the hot liquid when lifting it and carefully take a sip so as not to burn ourselves. We see a stop sign or a red light and we bring our car to a stop. We see cars coming at us on a two-lane highway and we stay on our side of the road. We firmly believe that our eyes are registering very high fidelity, accurate information about the size, speed, and distance of visible objects, and we react based on the impartial data the visual system provides. Well, maybe robots act this way, since this is the way we've designed and produced them. And maybe robots actually function based on impartial input about the absolute size, speed, and distance of any visible objects. However, according to studies done over the past decades, our consciousness is actually filtering, processing, and tailoring all the sensory data we receive and presenting us with a reality interface that we then use as the foundation for making decisions and responding. Psychologists and neuroscientists discovered that it is our consciousness that provides a stable, we think reliable, interface to a dizzyingly rich sensory world. Underneath this interface exist two vision systems that work parallel to each other, with both of them being provided by the same two sensors, the eyeballs, but that serve different functions. One visual system is responsible for visual perception, and this system is needed to identify objects, like approaching cars, friends walking towards us, independent of their size and location in our vision field. This is how we consciously experience our environment. The other visual system is responsible for action. It transforms visual input data into the movements of our eyes, hands, and legs. We need both in order to survive. I don't know if I've noticed when driving on a mountain road that the road signs seemed to not truly represent the actual slope we were climbing, that the slope was much steeper than represented. I did notice that the roads seemed more dangerous at night than the same roads traveled during the day. Apparently, two scientists at the University of Virginia a dentist prophet, and his graduate student, then graduate student, Jessica Nguyen, did not notice that the signs did not match our perception. Actually, they did notice that the signs did not match our perception. So, being scientists, they designed an experiment to find out why this happened. The two stood at the base of the hills on campus and asked students passing by to give an estimate of the hill's steepness in two ways. One was to align a flat disc to the slant of the hill, and the other was to place the palm of the one hand on a movable board that was on a tripod and to adjust the board slant until they felt that it matched the slope of the hill. However, this was done without looking at the hand on top of the board. What were the results? Based on visual cues alone, the students badly overestimated, interpreting a 31-degree slant as a much steeper 50-degree one. However, when people's eyes were guiding their hands, subjects judged accurately, tilting the board a fitting amount. The researchers found something even more interesting. The people's tendency to overestimate on the strictly visual part of the test increased by over a third, that's 33%, after they had run an exhausting race. However, the hand estimates were unaffected. A similar occurrence was produced when they were carrying a heavy backpack, were older, or were in poor physical condition or sick. The two researchers varied the experiment. They had the participants stand on top of a hill, either on a skateboard or a wooden box that was the same height as the skateboard. The participants then were asked to look down the hill and again judge the grade, both visually and manually. They were also asked how afraid they were to descend the hill. Those who were standing on the skateboard and were afraid judged the hill to be much steeper than those who were not afraid and were standing on the box. The visually guided action measurement, however, was not affected by fear. According to Prophet, perception seems to be flexible and reflects a person's physiological state. A person's perception of steepness depends on their ability to walk up or down the hill. When tired, frail, or carrying a load, the assessment of the hill and that guides the person's actions will differ from what they see. This is not the choice being made consciously. It appears that this is the way we are designed and wired. There was another experiment done by this pair of scientists. The results showing that baseball players saw the ball bigger than it was when they were hitting well and smaller when they were in a losing streak. Prophet also looked into the link between how success and failure in a task affects the person's perceptions of the world. He conducted an experiment with participants kicking a football through the goalposts from the 10-yard line. Initially, prior to kicking, everyone was asked to estimate the height and width of the goal. Everyone then each performed 10 kicks. The results were striking. Before kicking, all the participants had the same, though inaccurate, perception of the height and width of the goal. They all underestimated. After 10 kicks, however, the poor performers, those who scored two or less successful kicks, saw the goal as 10% narrower than before, while the good kickers, those who scored three or more goals, saw the goal posts about 10% wider. Result? How well you do, how successful you are, influences how you literally see the world. And this is not on a metaphorical level. Success or failure actually changes perception on a physiological level. After looking at the data produced in more detail, they found that the participants who kicked short of the goal saw the crossbar as higher than it was, and those who kicked wide saw the post to be much narrower. Further studies for golf and softball showed the same results as the football study we just covered. This leads to the extrapolation that our conscious perceptions of the world is not static. We do not have the capability of being fully objective in even the smallest common observations. There are various factors that influence our perception, our confidence, our fears, and our desires. Somehow, being a human automatically means that we are seeing the world, interpreting the world, through our own and constantly shifting lens or glasses. The expression, looking at the world through rose-colored glasses, actually is true and scientifically proven. When we have a positive outlook, everything that happens is seen as producing positive results. When we see the glass as half full, we know that we are getting a positive outcome and things will go smoothly. And this positive attitude allows us to succeed in what we do, to accomplish what we need to accomplish. I've now come to realize that my inability to identify the object was due to a number of factors, that what I was seeing in my mind's eye was not the hard reality that existed, and the other was that my previous knowledge and experience was blocking the current view. Until the brain was able to open to the possibility that something else existed, and therefore incorporated a new context for the duck, grass, and bushes as opposed to lake, pond, stream, shorelines, I was not able to see the duck. We've been focusing mainly on sight, but there are other senses that the brain needs to process as well. Hearing, taste, smell, touch. These are the five senses. However, there are senses beyond these five: balance, equilibrioception, pressure, temperature, thermoception, pain, nociception, motion, all of which involve the coordinated use of multiple sense organs. There is also kinesthesia, the precise awareness of our muscles and joint movements that allow for the coordination of muscles when we walk, talk, and use our hands. This is what allows us to touch the tip of our nose with our eyes closed, or to know where exactly we need to scratch. Synesthesia also exists. This is a phenomenon where one type of stimulation brings forth a sensation in another sense, like hearing a song results in seeing colors, or a shape may be sensed as smell. The most common type of synesthesia is linking numbers with letters and colors. The question now is, what else is there? What else is the brain receiving, has the capacity to receive, that is unknown or unused by us? If seeing is actually perceiving and interpreting, is everything an illusion, a figment of our brain's processing, filtering, and output? Apparently, as again being studied by scientists, we do have the ability to sense extrasensory input. We can know or see what is happening in another part of the planet. We can know what objects are being seen by another person in a remote location. We can know what will happen in the future, have cognitive dreams, can feel certain electromagnetic frequencies as heat or tingling of the skin. We can know what people are thinking. There are many others. What are the results of extrasensory perception? Scientific discoveries made in dreams, like Mendeleev's discovery of the periodic table, Alfred Russel Wallace's discovery of evolution by natural selection, Auguste Kekulé's discovery of the structure of the benzene molecule and aromatic chemistry, René Descartes' discovery of the scientific method, Otto Loewi's discovery of the proof that nerves transmit signals through chemical molecules. Whatever the sensory and extrasensory input data that the conscious mind has collected, the subconscious mind, or some as yet scientifically unknown capacity, processes and makes sense of these data while we sleep. One may ask, what is real? What is reality? How do we rationalize and make use of all the data that our brain collects and sorts and organizes? What is perception? TheDictionary.com gives the following definition of perception. 1. The act or faculty of perceiving, or apparently by means of the senses or of the mind. Cognition, understanding. 2. Immediate or intuitive recognition or appreciation as of moral, psychological, or aesthetic qualities, insight, intuition, discernment. 3. The result or product of perceiving, as distinguished from the act of perceiving, percept. 4. In psychology, a single unified awareness derived from sensory processes while a stimulus is present. To paraphrase, perception is fundamentally based on a collection of sensory input data that is somehow massaged, restructured, and reorganized by our brains to correlate with and fit into our current consciousness and awareness. And now I have my answer to my inability to see what was in front of my eyes. The total of the sensory input, bushes, grass, and duck, did not fit into my then knowledge of how the world works and what belongs with what and where. We can also extrapolate and say that perception is a sum total of previous notions, ideas, beliefs, knowledge that automatically will dictate what is rejected or permitted entry of anything new and does not fit into our current consciousness level. The next question is, are we destined to be frozen at one consciousness level and not grow and expand? However, when we look at human history, this theory holds no validity, since humans have evolved over time and new ideas have come in and eventually were accepted or rejected. We are not destined to be stuck. I did eventually see that duck. And this correlates very nicely to what the knowledge book has to say. According to the knowledge book glossary, perception is defined as intuition, feeling, the interpretation of the truth. While the definition of the theory of perception mentioned throughout the book is the theory of reinforcing the intuition by cosmic influences to accelerate evolvement. It appears that we have actually been evolving our sixth sense, our intuition, our ability to connect with and get information from a much larger continuum of electromagnetic data in order to be able to escape from the prison of the very limited sensory input of sight, sound, touch, taste, and smell. How does this happen? Do we get zapped by a cosmic influence beam and become a perfect being, able to actually perceive all that reality is without the brain having to filter and organize and process? Do we get to know all immediately? Well, even though it sounds like it would be great if such a thing could actually be done, it does not work this way. It sounds wonderful and easy if someone had a magic wand they could wave and some say the magic words like presto chango or abracadabra. We can then be transformed into beings that have the ability to perceive and know everything. Although this instant magic transformation does not happen, it does happen over a longer time scale, and this is where all the previous sacred texts and teachings were addressing us at our own particular social consciousness level, and we were gradually given newer and newer input data and newer methods for us to be able to grow in consciousness and awareness and evolution. And every time we incarnated, although we could not make great leaps, we made small, incremental leaps that allowed maybe a few pieces of knowledge to come in without blowing our brains or being automatically rejected. Like in my brain, maybe a duck can be seen outside of a water environment. And we get a bigger picture of our reality, and we have a higher consciousness, and the filter does not need to exclude as much input data. We are able to work within the physical construct of our current bodies, who exist at a particular energy level and gradually build our ability and capacity to incorporate higher level knowledge and resonate at higher energy levels and have higher frequency levels. At every stage, we were looking at our reality, our environment, with a particular set of filters. At the time of the Old Testament, it was the glasses, the filter of law, and obedience to the letter of the law. At the time of the New Testament, we had already incorporated the law and now had a new pair of glasses, a new filter of love and forgiveness and tolerance. At the time of the Quran, having already incorporated into our consciousness both the law and love, we were now learning to wear the glasses, the filter of social law. And now, having a consciousness that incorporates obedience to the law, love and forgiveness, and social law, we come into the knowledge book learning a new paradigm, a new pair of glasses, a new filter, where we consciously work with the programs and connect our intellect to universal energy, our logic to frequencies, and eventually get to the level of infinite awareness. And each word of the knowledge book is actually a magic word that transforms us, that opens new dimensions, and therefore new knowledge and energies to us, and allows us to expand our consciousness to a level we did not think possible. At each level and step of our incarnation process, we are living in a different, graduated illusion designed for us to accomplish a certain level of evolution and growth. The glasses we are wearing automatically exclude what we cannot address without causing damage to our brains and our bodies. However, over time, the cosmic influences being given by each of the sacred texts and now by the next level through the magical knowledge book, we are gradually accomplishing the feat where we will be able to see what exactly exists, what actually exists, not only here on our planet, but in other universes and realms. And now it is time to take a short break. Again, you are listening to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek. And our website, of course, is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. Telephone number for texting is 973-787-7035. For any topics or questions that you may have about anything covered on any one of these broadcasts, Turkish website is www.dkb-mevlana.org.tr. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Tune in to Synergenetic Living Radio, where Rick and Grace Paris discuss the synergenetic way of life, what it means to truly change your perspective in life, what it means to take control of your life and manifest your true desires. For more information on Rick and Grace Paris and Synergenetic Living, check out synergeneticliving.com. Get clear on the life you desire and the current life you are creating and what is between the two. Synergenetic Living, living life loud.
Your happiness is your choice on Natural Peace Radio. Follow Sarah Van Rieswijk as she addresses the power of emotions. Each month, Sarah covers different topics as she helps listeners activate their energetic spark and create powerful energy and amazing opportunities. Manifest your desires with Natural Peace Radio. For more information on Sarah and her work, visit naturalpeaceliving.com.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant, Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
The Janice Underwood Show, helping you create the life you want, not the life you tolerate. Tune in each Monday, 9 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as Janice delves into the life creator system and the next step in your spiritual evolution. Janice Underwood is gifted at helping spiritually minded people shift their mindsets to unleash the creator within. Our souls wish to wake us up. Those of us listening hear the call. Do you? For more information, visit JaniceUnderwood.com.
Have you ever wondered if there's a way to heal the deep, hidden inner issues, wounds, beliefs, and traumas? The Journey into Spiritual Healing engages people in all areas of their lives to heal themselves and others. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Dr. Jaffe brings conversations of healing of body, mind, and spirit as he merges the excellence of traditional medicine with the beauty of spiritual healing. For more information about Dr. Jaffe, this show, and his work, visit drjaffemd.com.
And hello, we're back again on the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek on Transformation Talk Radio. So we've been talking about perception, what color glasses are you wearing? And just to reiterate, our website is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net for lots more information on the Knowledge Book and being able to order it if you like. And also on lots of information on additional topics as well. My telephone number is 973-787-7035. Only if you just want to talk, you know, that sometimes happens, and maybe you could have a discussion on pros and cons of everything that anything that's been said on the radio by me. And we could also receive from you suggestions for topics that we need to cover here, or questions that you had that you would like to have addressed. And we'll probably next time be addressing some questions that we received from previous shows. And of course, the Knowledge Book website for Turkey is www.dkb-mevlana.org.tr. That website is also available on the United States website. Okay, so what have we been talking about today? We've been talking about perception, or what color glasses are you wearing? And the entire process started for me back a long time ago because I literally could not see what was there in the back of my window. And interestingly enough, until the point came where I actually saw this duck, I could not go back to not being able to not see it again. So the image in my mind's eye is always of this fuzzy blob of something in the middle of my vision field that I could not identify. And then afterwards, I actually tried to go back to what I had seen before, those blobs of color. I could not go back. And that was also interesting for me to note that once you've got it, you've got it, you can't go back. You could probably change things maybe later by getting a new environment, new set of knowledge, whatever. But once I saw, I saw. I could not not see again. Now, we've only talked about vision. We've only talked about maybe a little bit about the other senses as to how they interplay with our perception of reality. We talked about how our feelings, our physical construct are how well we're feeling physically, whether we're ill, whether we're carrying a heavy package, whether we've already done humongous stressful work just prior to maybe climbing a hill or going down a hill, how that literally affects how steep a hill is. Now, I park my car at a garage here in New York City, and let me tell you, when it's a little bit raining or it's a little bit cold and there's snow on the ground, or if I'm tired after having been shopping and doing stuff or taking care of things the entire day, when I come back, that hill seems very much a lot steeper than it was when I initially left the house. So lots of things affect our perception. We did not cover at all what our cultural background is, how that affects perception as well. So everything that we've had experienced up until this point, everything that we've been gone through, everything that we've learned becomes the force that pushes or can push everything that's unknown away from us. So this is one of the things that actually the knowledgeable calls perception, that if we are so stuck in our own particular way of thinking, way of looking, and believing that what we know and what we see is the only thing that is right, that is the only way to do and the only way to do it, then we rob ourselves of the ability to actually grow, to actually evolve, and become a more a person closer to what we would like to be. So I know, let's say, in one culture, let's say in the East, as far as I know, a firm handshake is not seen as being respectful. It is a very weak, just touching hands, knowing that the hand is touching the other hand and kind of holding but not firmly holding, that is respectful to the person in front of you. If someone hands you a business card, that business cards need to be looked at with both hands. It needs to be inspected, both sides, in order to show respect for the person who has just given you that business card. I know in the West, if you give a person a very weak handshake, which is what an Eastern handshake would be, then we are seen as not having any power, as we are seen as being weak and wishy-washy. In some cultures, talking about yourself, talking about your children, is seen as bragging, is seen as impolite, as seen as a projection of a person's ego on their environment. Well, in another case, anyone who is quiet, on the opposite of this, anyone who is quiet, and as far as the Western view is concerned, and does not speak about themselves, does not speak about their family, is seen as being secretive, is seen as being not wanting to share, as seen as being wanting to be separate from society. So depending on your view, depending on your mind's eye, depending on what you already have and know, that affects us on a daily basis as to how we will interact, how we will accept or not accept whatever is coming at us. So the knowledge book basically also has this ability through these magic words, because each one of those words is magic, it is able to provide us with new knowledge, provide us with new energies, new frequencies that we haven't had before, but giving it to us in a very incremental level and a bit by bit gradual level, so we are not ever at any point in time shocked, or we are not ever in any point in time hurt physically. There are times when we do get surprised, because sometimes some of us really need being projected from the back. So we need to be somehow motivated, somehow more strongly at other times. So we do get a bit of a surprise, but not too much for us. It'll help us to reset, rethink, and actually notice what's happening around us to be able to continue to grow and evolve. So we've gone through and went through all kinds of things that the brain can do. The brain can fill in the dots. It can plug up a hole in the middle of our vision field. It can make two-dimensional images into a three-dimensional image. It can project color and see color on the periphery where there are no receptor cells for color at that point. It can stop us from seeing if it doesn't fit with our current idea of what could be seen and what we are supposed to be seeing. So our brain has this beautiful ability, and we, thinking that we are literally seeing everything as real, don't realize that we are not seeing what's actually out there because it is previously filtered to us through this consciousness that we are currently in. So this is going to be, that's all the time we have for this week. If you have any questions or discussion points you would like to cover, please email me at mmjp99@gmail.com. Again, marymaryjohnpeter@gmail.com. 973-787-7035 is the telephone number for questions, for suggestions, for topics, or anything you wanted to cover. And again, we'll be here next week. Next week will be a rebroadcast, and the following week will be a live show again. And we'll be covering probably the law of acceptance and questions from the users. So once again, you've been listening to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik. And this has been Marge Potasik speaking to you. Thank you. We'll see you again. Have a great week. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik. Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity, and its time of transition to the Golden Age that provided the truth and energies and frequencies. Now, she shares information from and answers questions about the Knowledge Book with you each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit Marge at usa.theknowledgebook.net.